Welcome to the Pop Culture Pod Podcast. Now let's begin.
Podcast listener, and welcome to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. I am your host. My name is Chris Lockhart. Joining me, I've got three guests this evening. First up, he's been on the podcast before, and this is Richard Sabo. How's it going, Richard?
Not too bad. How's your night going? Thanks for having me back again.
Hey, no problem. Tonight's going good so far. I'm sure it'll keep going good. Next up is... We have Curtis Holloway. How's it going, Curtis?
That's going great, Chris. Thanks for asking.
Well, thank you for coming on. Did I say your last name right? I butcher last names. I apologize.
It's okay. It's Holloway. It rhymes with follow me.
Holloway. Okay, gotcha. and last but not least, we have Ragnar. How's it going, Ragnar?
Hey, pretty good. How are you guys?
Excellent. Excellent. All right. Well, for this episode, we're continuing our trek down Star Trek memory lane, and we're talking about Deep Space Nine. In particular, we are talking about season one of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. We're going to be going over every episode, and we're going to be sharing stories and anecdotes and whatnot. But before we get to that, Richard and I recorded an episode previously, Why We Love Deep Space Nine. Curtis and Ragnar were not on that podcast episode, so I'm going to throw that question to each of you. First, I'll start with you, Curtis. Why do you love Deep Space Nine?
Well, I'm sure that your listeners would want some sort of profound answer that speaks to, I don't know. The main point is, it's the one that I can remember watching growing up. I remember a couple episodes of TNG. I was born in 86.
Okay.
So for me, I was in grade 4 when Deep Space Nine started. And that, of all the seasons, has the most episodes that I can recall from when they originally aired. So it makes it easy to be my favorite.
Excellent. And Ragnar, why do you love Deep Space Nine?
Well, DS9 for me was Star Trek. As a kid, I watched the very first episode when it aired on television for the first time. Mm-hmm. And I watched the whole series through every week, watching it with my mom, who introduced me to Star Trek. And then later, I discovered Star Trek The Next Generation, and then the original series and all the stuff that came after. But for me, it started with DS9. So, yeah, that's my origin series.
Excellent. And Curtis, I want to ask you something. Before we started recording, you were sharing a story about all of us in regards to Deep Space Nine. I was wondering if you could continue that.
Absolutely. Well, I was just pointing out that 2014, myself and Richard went to the small town of Vulcan, Alberta. See, we had gone to a convention before, but we were like, you know what? There's got to be somewhere local that's doing it. And we're from Edmonton, Alberta. So we're about halfway between you and Vulcan, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
So we found out about the Vulcan Spock Days is what it was at that point. They hadn't separated their summer festival from the convention itself. So the guests that year were Rene Auberjonois, who of course played Odo, Chase Masterson, who played Leeta, and Nana Visitor, who played Major Kira. And we said, well, heck yeah, we want to go. Like, Deep Space Nine's our favorite series. Oh my God, that looks amazing. It's going to be a small town. And we had only ever been to the Creation event in Las Vegas, which is huge.
Mm-hmm.
So we wanted to see, well, what's it like with, you know, maybe we thought maybe there'd be like 1,000 people there. Turns out there's actually way less. So we ended up going down there. And, well, there were beer gardens the night before the convention because they had a baseball tournament. So, of course, that's where I went. And Richard was my driver. So begrudgingly, he came with, and somewhere with a beer in each hand, wandering through the crowd, meeting people, we stumbled across this friendly-looking dude who was, I think you struck up a conversation with us, actually.
I did.
And we got talking, and we just sort of became instant friends in the beer gardens.
Well,
I'm just going to throw in there, at the time, we were smoking our pipes, and Chris was like,
mm-hmm.
you could smell it. He's like, oh, that is nice. And then he came over,
That's what it was.
Yep.
Yeah, because you had the Gandalf pipe, and I had my pipe, and it was awesome.
Yeah, I used to smoke piping tobacco, so I picked that out as soon as I walked in. Like, I think I didn't even make it in there yet. I think I was walking up, and I could smell it, and I was like, I gotta, you know, ask them where they, you know, about their pipes and stuff, and... And yeah, like it was a beer gardens for a ball tournament, and I didn't even know you guys were there for the convention until we started talking, and then we started talking Star Trek, and I was like, oh, awesome.
Yeah, and I can't remember if Ragnar was there that year specifically.
No.
You were? Are you sure? Because I feel like you were there every year that we were there.
No, I was definitely not there the year that Odo was there.
Oh, man, we'll tell stories about that later on, but yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, that was definitely a good year. Like, that was one of my favorites. Yeah, Rene Auberjonois, awesome gentleman.
Rest in peace, good sir.
Yep. Yeah, very unfortunate that he has since passed.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's start with the episode discussions. So we'll as I said, we're starting with season one, which took place in 1993, all those years ago. The first episode, which is also the first and second episode, was the 2-hour series premiere called The Emissary. The stardate was 46379.1. It was a story by Rick Berman and Michael Piller, directed by David Carson, who also directed Star Trek Generations. And the original air date was January 3rd, 1993. A new crew was assigned to the former Cardassian space station, which was formerly Tarok Nor, but is now referred to by the Federation as Deep Space Nine. It is a joint Federation Bajoran force with Commander Sisko in charge. But his life is dramatically changed when he is declared the emissary to the prophets by the Bajoran priest. It was the Kaiopaka.
Yeah, that's right.
But all right, I got like okay. I'll open it up, and we'll go around the table. I'll ask each of you your thoughts on the episode. But by all means, chime in anytime. If whatever someone's saying is something you want to add to, this for me this was like the best pilot episode opening. You know, seeing the Battle of Wolf 359 was pretty cool. I mean, it's something that, you know, was referenced on TNG. We saw the aftermath on The Next Generation. We didn't actually see the battle, but we got to see part of the battle in this episode. And I love the fact that they brought Patrick Stewart back for the role of Locutus for this episode. I thought it was great. I thought, you know, as much as people, you know, talked about, you know, with Star Trek Generations, the passing of the baton between Kirk and Picard, I like this one because, you know, like Picard and Sisko, to me it was almost like, you know, welcome to the club. And Picard, you know, shakes Sisko's hand at the end of the episode, and then he leaves, and now Sisko's in charge. I love the special effects. I love, you know, we got to meet Dukat in this episode.
Can I just chime in real quick before we get too far?
Yeah, go by all means.
Like you said, this is probably one of the best series premieres I've ever seen. I really like it.
Yep.
But just recently, I've been kind of going over the episodes and just remembering, and I was watching The Emissary, and that few seconds where you see Sisko's face behind the glass as he's watching his ship blow up with his wife on it, that was the moment I knew that I was going to love this show, because you could see everything that you would think you would see in a man's face given the situation that he's in. I just knew that he was going to be top-notch, and I was not disappointed.
Yeah, I loved the, you know, the dynamic between him and Jake as well. You know, like they really did feel like a father and son right off the bat.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They had that chemistry, the connection, and even off-screen. I mean, we talked about that last time, how Avery Brooks would often refer to Cyric Lofton as his son in public, and Cyric Lofton would refer to him as his father in public.
Yep, exactly. Also, in this episode, we got to see Chief O'Brien say goodbye to the Enterprise. I thought that was that scene with him, you know, where he goes up to basically say goodbye to Picard, and then he doesn't actually go into the ready room. He's about to beam off, and Picard walks in, and they, you know, have a little exchange back and forth, and then Picard beams O'Brien to Deep Space Nine, and then the Enterprise leaves. You know, like, it was an awesome exchange, I thought, between O'Brien and Picard.
Yeah, definitely.
But
I would agree with that. And it was kind of, it was a little bit awkward, but you'd think that that's kind of how it would be with somebody who is a chief petty officer and a captain. It's like two polar opposite ranking on the ship. As much as they got along and they were good colleagues, they weren't exactly best friends. So it makes sense, and they played it really well.
Yeah, exactly. Curtis and Ragnar, do you guys have any thoughts or comments you want to throw in there about the Emissary?
Well, I had a slightly different take on it, because I always thought, and it's probably because I didn't watch Next Generation first, I always thought Picard was kind of a dick in that episode towards Sisko. I thought he was, yeah, kind of rude and abrupt. And upon rewatching it, I think my perception was off a little bit, because I didn't know the whole backstory about how Picard was a Borg.
Yep.
But at the time, I remember thinking, like, man, why does everybody like that guy?
It does come off like that. And Sisko, he sort of is also abrasive in that way.
Yes.
Given the reasoning, and it makes sense. So I understand how you can see that.
And just the look in Patrick Stewart's face, like when Sisko says, you know, we met in battle, I was on the Saratoga at Wolf 359. And you see, like, Pat, like, his eyes drop, and you know, like, you see the weight of what happened to him in his face in that instant. Like, such great acting, I think, on Patrick, and on both of their parts.
They act very well together, and they're so different in their styles of acting, but I like the way they play off each other.
Yeah, that is one thing I kind of really wish we would have seen, some sort of team-up between Sisko and Picard. Like, you know, like for those first couple seasons of Deep Space Nine, when TNG was still on the air, I always had my fingers crossed that we were going to get, like, a real crossover. But unfortunately, I mean, Bashir came over to the Enterprise for an episode. You know, like, they did film an episode of TNG where they were at Deep Space Nine. But other than that, you know, you didn't, you know, like, again, we never really saw, we never did see Picard and Sisko act off each other. And I think that's a real shame that, that's what happened.
I have a thought on that.
Do tell.
Well, Star Trek has always been one of the very much more progressive shows on TV, first interracial kiss on screen, etc.
Yep.
And here we had Benjamin Sisko in The Emissary. It's like, oh my God. And this is going to sound all kinds of off in 2020. But back in 1993, you got to understand, it was a whole different world. And it was like, what? They made the captain black? And, you know, it's nowadays it's no big deal. But back then it was like, oh, okay, well, something's different here, obviously. So I think that perhaps they want to let Sisko have his spotlight, let Avery Brooks really be the star of the show. And I could see them perhaps fearing that Patrick Stewart with his... The man's got a lot of screen presence. Now, I would argue that he couldn't have taken it from Avery Brooks had he tried, but perhaps it was something they were worried about.
Well, I actually do I do know the actual answer. And it basically it was business is what it came down to. Because the Next Generation and Deep Space Nine were both syndicated TV shows, which means that, you know, TV stations bought the rights to air those shows, right? Now, what happened with TNG is Deep Space Nine, believe it or not, was actually a more profitable show than The Next Generation was in syndication, because when back in 1987 when Next Generation went on the air, you know, only a certain number of TV stations bought into it, right? Because they didn't think it was going to be as popular as it was. So once they bought into it, they were the ones that had the rights to that show for that region or area or whatever, right? So other stations couldn't buy into it. So when Deep Space Nine came on the air, everyone was buying into it because everyone knew how popular TNG was, right? So the reason why they didn't have direct crossovers is because certain, like, markets, certain TV stations only had Deep Space Nine. Like, they didn't have TNG and Deep Space Nine. So they couldn't air them back-to-back. Some stations did. A lot did, but there were some that didn't. So, you know, unfortunately, that's why they didn't have, like, you know, part one on TNG, part two on Deep Space Nine. But they did do
crap. What a blast from the past.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. The limitations of delivery at that time. My goodness.
Well, yeah, like syndication doesn't really exist anymore. But back then, that's all that was there, right? That would pick up Star Trek at the time. But
thanks for filling that in. I had always wondered about that.
Yeah, I forget where, I don't know. I either read it or heard it at a convention or something, but yeah, like, say it Las...
definitely makes sense.
Yeah, like, say Las Vegas, for example, you know, like, maybe they had two or three different channels that had Deep Space Nine, but only one channel with TNG. So, that's just the way it was. But, anyway, it was great, you know, that they had, that he came on and we had all that. And one thing to note with this episode is it also introduced some other characters, one of them being Nog. On the previous episode that Rich and I recorded, we noted how Nog is probably the most evolved character in all of Star Trek history. Like, literally in this episode, he was the thief nephew of Quark, who gets arrested, and on the final episode, you know, 7 years later, he's promoted to lieutenant in Starfleet. You know, like he went literally from being a thief to being a lieutenant in Starfleet by the end of the series. Such an amazing transformation of a character. And then
not only that, but also a thief who's a member of a non-Federation species.
Yes. And the first Ferengi in Starfleet and all that. And then we also noted that how, you know, at the same time, over on Voyager, poor Harry Kim started as an ensign, and he ended the series as an ensign.
But that always made me really salty, because Ensign Kim probably put in some of the hardest work. And then you look at Paris, kind of slacked a bit, had a good arc, put in some good effort.
Do you want to get even...
let's do it. That was the end of my little mini rant.
I apologize. Do you want to get even saltier?
Sure. Oh, yeah.
So, CBS, is that who owns Star Trek now?
Yep, CBS.
Yeah, okay. So CBS confirmed that events taking place in Star Trek Online, which is a fantastic game, by the way, are indeed canon. So you'll be happy to know that approximately 40 years after the events of Star Trek Voyager, Harry Kim is still a captain.
Oh, nice.
That's not so bad. That's not so bad. I would rather be a captain than be an admiral, just like Kirk said.
Yeah, but after 40 years, man.
Again, not
time to settle down, maybe.
I know we're supposed to be talking about Deep Space Nine, but I just want to throw this in there. I think with Harry Kim, unfortunately, for whatever reason, I think he pissed off the producers, because Garrett Wan, he was the first actor that was denied being able to direct an episode. And I know he really pushed for it, and they basically said no. And then when Seven of Nine came on, they were actually going to kill him off and keep Kes on the ship. But then they ended up going with getting rid of Kes and keeping Harry on. And then, like I said, Harry never got promoted. And I know Garrett was pushing for it. Like, he wanted to be promoted, and they just didn't do it. So I don't know if he pissed off the producers. I don't know, but... It's shitty all around what happened to that guy.
You know, I really like it when the actors direct in Star Trek. Avery Brooks, I think he directed a couple episodes. Yep. And I believe LeVar Burton directed In the Pale Moonlight.
I believe
I was going to say, LeVar Burton's directed some of my favorite episodes.
Oh, yeah. just going through the list, like, I mean, Rene Auberjonois directed, Avery Brooks directed... LeVar Burton, Patrick Stewart, Jonathan Frakes, who else? Gates McFadden directed an episode, but it was probably one of the worst episodes of Next Generation. It was the Sub Rosa episode.
Wow, cut deep.
It was bad. You get to see Dr. Crusher in some lingerie, though, so that was okay, but.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's not worth sitting through that episode.
Yeah, no, that was pretty bad.
I just want to expand a little bit on Curtis's point, speaking about progressive Star Trek. This was when, I think we had a little bit talking about this when we talked about Picard and Discovery and stuff, is that Star Trek Deep Space Nine and TNG and some of the other Star Treks, they did what we call progressiveness correctly, where you have all these different influences, and it's natural, it's organic. In the newer Trek, it's not like that. And that's what I appreciate about old Trek, is that nobody had a problem with a black captain or a female first officer. And I just really appreciate how they did it back then as opposed to now.
Well, yeah, I mean, that goes all the way back to the original series. I mean, you know, especially back in the 60s, having... you know, a black woman on the bridge as an officer, like, that never happened before, you know?
Or an Asian
next man. To an Asian dude.
Yeah.
Next to a Russian dude.
And I mean, they never acknowledged it on the show. It was just like, this is the future. And I mean, that's the way it should be. But yeah, unfortunately, yeah. Modern Trek kind of forgets that a little bit. Kurtzman Trek.
Yeah, I agree with what you guys are saying there.
But, all right, so before we move on to the next episode, I have a couple little nitpicks. So if you guys have a nitpick on any of the episodes, be sure to throw it out there. One thing that always bothered me about this, and is why, I know they needed to kill off Jennifer Sisko, you know, to make Benjamin Sisko the man he is, right? Like, he had to go through that tragedy, right? I understand from a storytelling perspective, but I never understood why they would take a Federation ship into battle without evacuating the families. That always kind of bugged me, you know. You know, I've heard people say it's because they didn't have time, like they, you know, wherever the Saratoga was, like they weren't flying past any planets and they had to get to Wolf 359, which is possible. It is. But it always seemed, I don't know, because
escape pods, man.
Yeah, like they could have done something with the families, you know, bringing them into a battle. That didn't sit right with me. Never did.
And if you notice, the USS Saratoga is Miranda class, mm-hmm. which has been in service for approximately 100 or 120 years, around Kirk's time.
Yeah, that's like back in the Reliant class days or something.
Well, Reliant is Miranda class, right?
I was going to say.
And do you really think that they absolutely needed that one ship? They couldn't make a couple-hour detour or send out the escape pods, because escape pods, as we know, can survive for an extended period of time in space.
In the Badlands, even.
Exactly. That was what I was going in my head. Worf lasted in an escape pod in the Badlands.
At least through one Klingon opera.
Which is a long time in human time.
That's a good measurement time.
And then my only other nitpick was when O'Brien goes up to go to Picard's ready room when he's going to say his goodbyes, and then he backs out. And then some, like, weird lieutenant is, like, in command of the bridge at that moment. And we never saw her on TNG. We never saw her again after that. It's like, couldn't they have at least, like, had Counselor Troy or maybe Data? You know, just somebody familiar just for that, you know, one exchange? Like, I don't know. Maybe they'd have to pay the guy a bunch of money. You know, it's cheaper to get an extra, I guess. Maybe that was the reasoning.
That's most likely what it was, because for a 10-second...
expensive.
Oh, yeah. He was almost as expensive or more expensive than Patrick Stewart at the time.
Yeah. But very, very... a missed opportunity, I think. But that being said, let's move on to episode 3, which is actually the second episode, but we'll just go with the numbering. And that is Past Prologue, Stardate 46397.3, directed by Winrich Kolbe, written by Catherine Powers, and the original air date is January 10th, 1993. A Bajoran terrorist with ties to Kira arrives on Deep Space Nine and is pursued by the Cardassians. And this is the episode where Garak is introduced, and also the Duras sisters make an appearance. I was really excited when I first saw this episode because the Duras sisters showed up. I thought that was cool. You know, having the TNG connection there. Also, right off the bat, I knew there was something up with Garak. You know, he was an intriguing character right off the hop. And Andrew Robertson, he gets all the credit. He's such an amazing actor. And Garak is easily one of my favorite characters in all of Star Trek. All right, well,
I concur.
Let's go around the table. Richard, what are your thoughts on this episode?
I actually really enjoyed it. I'm a big fan of Klingons in general. I think Ragnar would agree with that statement. specifically the Duras sisters. I remember being young and having a crush on Lursa. But that's totally beside the point. I like that their interaction goes with what their characters are. They're sort of roguish, you know, illegal, fencing sort of Klingons. And they didn't change them, which I really appreciated. And the character that played Kira's friend, I'm just trying to remember what his name is, Tana Loss.
Yeah.
And the Kon Maa, I think that they could have done a bit more. I can't remember if they do in future episodes, but maybe a bit more including the Kon Maa and some of the underground Bajoran factions, which I was always fascinated with. But overall, I enjoyed the episode and the interaction between Bashir and Garak. That was the first taste. And as always, the two of them have really good on-screen chemistry. and I just thought it was fantastic. The two of them together. The episode is, it's not too bad, but just a few points in the episode I really enjoyed.
And Curtis, what are your thoughts?
Well, for me, the episode's all about Garak. Easily my favorite Deep Space Nine character. I was so excited when we got to meet Andrew Robinson a few years ago on Vulcan.
Agreed.
That's beside the point. We did see, well, it was cool because so far, what did we know about the Cardassians? We knew that they were very militaristic, I guess you could say, very, very dedicated to, as Gul Dukat puts it, the state. You know, but we didn't really have a lot to go with. But with Garak, we start to understand that these sons of bitches are clever and they always know more than they're letting on. But they'll never just give you a straight answer, but you will get the answer. You just got to sort of dance around and figure it out. And damn it, that makes them so interesting. So I love that little taste that we got of that in this episode from plain simple Garak's little exchange with Bashir.
There's so much depth with Cardassians that he brings to the characters, and I really enjoy it.
He's such a pleasant man, too. My God.
Speaking of Garak, and I brought this up in the last episode with Richard, and this is for Curtis and Ragnar, have you guys watched the Deep Space Nine documentary that just came out like last year, What We Leave Behind?
I have not, but it is very high on my list.
It's also free and streaming on Tubi.
Well, yes. I just found out it existed, so I'm going to watch it later tonight.
Yes,
yeah, I'm writing that down. Tubi?
Yeah, it's on the it's on the Tubi app, and it is produced by Ira Stephen Bear, who's one of the showrunner of Deep Space Nine from season 3 on. But in that documentary, Andrew Robinson has the revelation that Garak was gay and that he actually had a thing for Bashir. But for whatever reason, they didn't write it into the show. I thought that was interesting.
I wish they would have written that into the show. It would have brought even more dynamic to Garak's character and also a whole new dynamic to the Cardassians as a species. Because, you know, they're similarly humanoid, male and female.
Yep.
There's no reason to say that there would not be, you know, gay people, homosexual people in the Cardassian species.
And we would have been able to see Bashir get creeped out a lot more often, which is one of Siddig's strong points, I'd say. That would have been hilarious.
Absolutely.
I assume it was just because of the time in the early 90s, you just couldn't quite push the envelope that far.
Yeah, definitely for television, they weren't completely ready at that point. At least, I guess for Star Trek, too, at that time.
I think it's a bit of that, and Andrew Robinson told us in Vulcan that Garak was supposed to be gay when he had his Q&A on stage. And I can't remember what the heck he said was the reason, but I do know that the actors did have quite a bit more say than usual over the direction of their characters in Deep Space Nine. So it could have been that Andrew just didn't feel that Garak was evolving in that direction as he continued to play him.
Yep. All right. Well, I do have a little trivia here. I'm not sure if you guys were aware of this, but the Admiral in this episode, Admiral Rollman, she was actually in two episodes of Deep Space Nine. She was in Past Prologue in the first season, and she was in Whispers in the second season. Did you know that she was played by actress Susan Bay, who was also Leonard Nimoy's wife at the time?
I did not know that.
I did not either.
Yep. No clue.
Yeah, she and Leonard Nimoy were married in 1989 and were married to until his death in 2015. Also, her first husband was John Shuck, who played the Klingon ambassador in Star Trek IV and Star Trek VI. He also played a Cardassian in season 2. You know, it was in the Maquis two-parter. He was Leggett Parn. But, the Admiral in this episode is Leonard Nimoy's wife.
That's pretty cool, actually.
Yeah, I had no idea.
All right. Did you guys have anything else before we move on to episode 4?
Well, I just wanted to say I loved the Cardassians right from the start. I knew they were supposed to be villains, and they definitely were great at that.
Yep.
But I just thought they looked really cool. They were kind of scary, and you sensed that they were very dangerous because they were so smart.
Right, yep. Because you hadn't seen the Cardassians in TNG yet. This was your first exposure.
And basically, they were basically supposed to be like the Nazis of the future. Like, that was their whole shtick, right? With Bajor being, and what the occupation being an allegory for the Holocaust. But yeah, very, very interesting adversaries. I've always liked the Cardassians. All right, so episode 4 is A Man Alone, and the stardate is 46421.5, directed by Paul Lynch, story by Gerald Sanford and Michael Piller. January 17th, 1993 was the original air date. Odo is accused of the murder of a Bajoran murderer. Not one of my favorite episodes. Very, in my mind, generic. You know, like, Odo's getting... Basically, it was like a racism episode. Like, you know, because he was a shapeshifter, they couldn't trust him. Which I thought was really weird that they all turned... Like, all the Bajorans turned on him so quickly. Given that we find out later he was kind of revered by the Bajorans during the occupation a little bit. Even though he worked for the Cardassians. Do any of you guys have any thoughts on this episode?
Well, everything's subject to the context of the time that it was produced in, so I'm not 100% sure what they were going for, but they really drove home the point that, like, Odo is different.
Yeah.
Obviously, they were trying to highlight that, which they did, but... Nah, I'm with you. It's not... I'll watch it. I usually nap through it because I'm binge watching and you got to have a nap sometime. But, you know, it's not my least favorite episode, but it's certainly not up there.
Well, this is definitely one I think I need to rewatch because I honestly probably haven't watched this since 93. Like, I just remember not being blown away by this episode. But Ragnar, did you have anything to add?
I think you guys have pretty much summed it up. I don't even really remember this episode. I don't think it was terrible, but I don't think it was anything special.
I do have one point to make, is this was basically the beginning of Jake and Nog's friendship, the No Jake Consortium. And I really appreciate that part of the episode, because those two had some of the best, like, dual arcs in the series as well. And this was the beginning of that, and it was good to see that.
Okay.
Well, and it was also the introduction of the running joke with the self-sealing stem bolts.
That's right.
Okay, yeah, this is the one where Keiko starts the school. All right.
That's right.
I completely forgot about that. All right, well, let's move on to episode 5, and that's Babel. Stardate 46423.7, directed by Paul Lynch once again. Story by Sally Caves and Ira Stephen Bear. Teleplay by Michael McGreevy and Naren Shankar. January 24th, 1993. A mysterious virus plagues the station, causing speech distortions and eventually death. Kind of, timely with what's going on in the world right now.
I had the same thought while I was watching that yesterday.
Yeah, but we don't hang on Odo and Quark to help us out, thank Christ.
Agreed.
All right. Well, what are you guys' thoughts on this episode? To me, it was just another, most science fiction shows will do something like this, where there's a plague, a virus, and they need to work to solve it, right? They even did this on an episode of The Walking Dead. Again, it's one of those that, I don't think I've seen it since 1993.
Well, I really enjoy it. The context of the the main plot of the episode is sort of secondary, in my opinion. We really get to see Odo and Quark interact a lot more, and it's in a greater capacity other than, I'm watching you, Quark, you know, yeah, the usual thing that Odo does. And I think this had to do with Iris Stephen Bear, because, of course, he stuck around forever. And you start to see Odo and Quark work together, and you get to see the beginning of the dynamic between the two of them, which without this episode, you couldn't have the episode in season, is it 6 or 7, where they're trying to climb that mountain and they have the stupid communications device they have to lug along and Odo breaks his leg. Must be season 6, because he's a solid.
Season 5.
Season 5?
Yep.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yo, that was a great
episode. Yeah, I don't think you get that episode without this episode sort of setting up that relationship, you know?
Yeah, no, that is very true. It's very true. All right, well, episode 6 is Captive Pursuit, and it is Stardate 46477.5, directed by Corey Allen. Story by Jill Sherman Donner, teleplay by Jill Sherman Donner and Michael Piller. And this is an O'Brien episode, and the original air date was my birthday, January 31st, 1993. I remember liking this episode. I don't think it's been a long time since I've rewatched this. But I remember Tosk. I remember, I liked it. I like O'Brien, you know, every episode that features O'Brien, I think, is great. Let's go around the table. What do you boys think?
Well, honestly, I really enjoy the episode. I really like sort of the dynamic of the hunter-prey. It's also echoed in Voyager with the Hirogen, though I think the Hirogen were more fleshed out as a species than the species that were chasing Tosk. But the interaction between Tosk and O'Brien doing his engineer thing and going through and fixing the ship, I thought that was really great. And then basically helping him escape and resuming the hunt, I thought that was all really enjoyable and sort of true to O'Brien's character of, you know, he's sort of an honorable man in that direction.
Yeah, I agree with you, Rich. And, like, I do wish they would have gone back to these people. Like, you know, flesh them out a little bit more in future episodes. Because there's definitely something there, I think. Ragnar and Curtis, do you guys have anything you want to add?
Well, I just wanted to touch on what you just said there. And that, you know, especially later on when I watched other Star Trek series, that was something I always liked about DS9 better, was that there was more storylines that were connected and character arcs and story arcs that ran longer. It wasn't every episode being self-contained.
Yep.
So yeah, I just wanted to say that was something I always loved about DS9.
And Curtis, do you have anything you want to add?
Well, O'Brien's probably my favorite Starfleet character on the show. And I'm not Tosk, but you know. Damn it, I had something for this and now I've lost it. I got busy listening and I lost my train of thought. Anyway, I find that in Deep Space Nine, you have plot episodes and you have character episodes. And this was really a character episode, and it was super cool to see more of O'Brien. Like, the dude was OG. He was at the helm on the Battle Bridge, episode 1 of TNG, right? Mm-hmm. And we get to see him come to here, but we don't really know the guy. So we finally got to get to know the guy, and I really liked that.
Yep, agreed. All right, episode 7, Q-less, Stardate 46531.2, directed by Paul Lynch, story by Hannah Louise Shearer, and teleplay by Robert Hewitt Wolfe. February 7th, 1993 was the original air date. Q and Vash arrive on Deep Space Nine. However, Vash has realized the annoyance of Q and wants him to leave her alone. It was okay. I didn't mind it. You know, I love John DeLancey. I love seeing Q. And I loved in this episode that Sisko punches him in the face. I think that was awesome. And I love the line when Q says, "You hit me." Picard never hit me. And Sisko says, I'm not Picard. Like, yeah, it really solidified Sisko as a badass. When you can punch a Q and he doesn't just snap you out of existence like Thanos, that says something. You know, he definitely earned his respect from Q. All right, well, let's go around the table. I'll start with you, Ragnar. What are your thoughts on this episode?
Well, I loved it. I thought it was a fun episode. I like Q. I know some people find him really irritating. I think he's irritating in a charming sort of way.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed. And like you said, I just love how Sisko dealt with him so differently than how Picard dealt with him. And I thought it was a great episode. I really enjoyed it.
And Curtis, what are your thoughts?
Well, of course, I love Q as a character, but it's because of John DeLancey. If he didn't so gleefully throw himself into every scene being that character, Q would be a lot less fun. I'm with Ragnar. I absolutely love Q. I think he's a charming little imp, but I can't get enough of him. And this episode in particular, it wasn't quite as much fun as some of the TNG Q episodes or even the Voyager Q episodes, but I'm just happy to see John DeLancey, you know?
Yep. And Richard, your thoughts, sir?
You know, I would like to echo a lot of that. Though it was not necessarily the best Q episode, I actually really enjoyed it. Again, you know, with Sisko punching Q out, that just made me giggle, given that you know that Picard would never punch him out because he's not that kind of guy. But,
yeah,
you know, Sisko has a temper, and he definitely lost his temper a little bit, punched him out. It was nice to see Vash again. They sort of continue with continuity, and I really appreciate when they do continue continuity because that's a big deal for me. I also get really salty when they don't continue continuity. You know, got to be fair and balanced on that one. But overall, it was an enjoyable episode, and the sort of the subplot with selling of the Gamma Quadrant expensive items and the dynamic between Vash and Quark is, you know, given how similar they are, they do play well off each other, I thought. And sort of rolls along with the character progression of all the characters. Not necessarily a plot episode, I don't think. But a good character progression episode. I thought it was really cool. I also very much enjoyed it.
Yes.
I've got a piece of trivia, actually, about Vash.
Go ahead, Curtis.
And it's not directly DS9 related, so I do apologize. But we first meet her on Ryza, going for the Tox Utat artifact. And it was planted on Ryza, hidden in a cave. Fun fact, again, this is from Star Trek Online, which has been confirmed canon. The person who placed the Tox Utat in the cave was you, the player.
Hmm.
Yeah. That hurts my brain a little bit.
It's some time travel-y stuff. You know how Star Trek gets.
Interesting. I also had some Vash trivia that I was going to throw out there. One of the nitpicks I have, and it isn't directly for this episode, but I wish they would have brought Vash back on Deep Space Nine, because like Richard was saying, like, her and Quark played well off each other. I figured, you know, like, she could come to the station, do some, you know, some business and stuff. I really wish we could have seen more of her. The reason why I'm pretty sure she didn't make an appearance on the TNG again, was because in real life, when they filmed that episode, Captain's Holiday, her and Patrick Stewart actually hooked up. And Patrick Stewart was married at the time. So he actually, I think it was, I can't remember if it was on, I think it was the TNG, one of the special features they were talking about it. Patrick Stewart actually left his wife for this actress, Jennifer Hetrick, who plays Vash. And then I think at some point, like during, after her appearance in season 4, her and Patrick Stewart split up. So that's why she didn't come back to TNG. But she definitely could have come back for Deep Space Nine. Like Richard was saying, you know, her and Quark played well off each other. I really wish they would have maybe explored that a little bit.
I also would have liked if they brought back Q. Definitely a missed opportunity, and also with Q. Deep Space Nine only had the one Q episode. TNG had several, and Voyager had two or three, I believe. And Q being one of the most popular guest characters on the show, and having some of the least screen time, just goes to show it how much of an impact he made. Mm-hmm. And they could have done more with him, I think, honestly.
Yep, absolutely. All right, well, the next episode, episode 8, is Dax. And it is Stardate 46910.1, directed by David Carson. Story by Peter Allen Fields, teleplay by DC Fontana and Peter Allen Fields. DC Fontana started her career in Star Trek as Gene Roddenberry's secretary back during the first season of the original series. And then he gave
her... Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, then she was writing or correcting his scripts and contributing so much that he just asked her to write, or she asked him. I can't remember how it goes. And then she became one of the, you know, more popular writers in the original series. And she, you know, did the TNG pilot Encounter at Farpoint. So in this episode, Jadzia Dax is accused of a murder committed by her symbiont in another lifetime. You know, we get to know more about the Trills in this episode. You know, the whole past lives thing and all that. And Curzon is accused of murdering this guy's father. And then I can't remember how it ended. But, you know, obviously she got off. And, you know, it was a murder mystery episode. It was okay. I didn't mind it.
I can help you with some of the story details afterwards.
Go ahead, Richard.
So, there was a man who came from a place called Klystron 4. His father had been murdered during their Civil War period, and they had thought that it was Curzon Dax who had perpetrated the crime. So they came to Deep Space Nine and tried to, you know, take her back with a warrant, but they knew that it might not go through properly because it's a Bajoran space station, even though Klystron and the Federation have extradition treaties. So they had to be all sneaky about it, but they were caught and brought back, and there was a hearing of sorts. And they're going through it like a murder mystery. Dax wasn't saying anything. She was kind of sworn to a secrecy thing. But near the end, after they've gone through everything, and there's a lot of Curzon exposition, which I really enjoyed because Curzon sounded like a really badass character that would have been fun to get more into. Turns out Curzon was having an illicit affair with the general's wife, the man who was killed. And that's why she knows, the wife. She comes back with Odo, who is doing investigations. And she tells everyone that Curzon was having an affair with her and that he couldn't have killed the general. And, you know, she's obviously released.
So, Richard, did you enjoy the episode?
I actually really did. I enjoy those sort of, like, murder mystery types. And I remember watching it when I was young, and I was thinking to myself, like, I wonder who done it. Because at the time, I never thought to myself of, like, really trying to figure it out because I didn't think I would be right. So I just watched the episode, and then I enjoyed it. And, yeah, I thought it was really good character exposition. You know, you get to learn more about some of the other characters. Odo goes off on a side mission, which I thought was really cool. And then he makes it back with the, you know, the ultimate... I'm not sure what that word would be. The device to make sure that Jadzia is shown as innocent. Or Dax in particular.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a great episode. I enjoyed it.
Curtis, what are your thoughts?
Well, usually, you know, I had a nap earlier in the season while I was binging, and then I've watched a few now. And by the time this one comes around, I'm about ready for nap number two. but I really do enjoy the Arbiter and the lady who plays the Arbiter during the hearing. I just get such a kick out of her. She's always got me howling. Just hilarious. You know, we get to see some Curzon backstory. That's cool, but it's... Personally, I don't get much of a kick out of the episode, unfortunately, except for the Arbiter lady. She's awesome.
And that's the same actress that was in that TNG episode from season three, right? The Survivors? Where it's the episode...
Yeah,
where she doesn't actually exist.
Correct.
Yeah.
It's just that little one green square on that desolated planet with that seemingly omnipotent being. That's right.
Yeah, I love that episode of TNG, and yeah, I really like that actress because she was in Mrs. Doubtfire. She was in
And Liar. Liar.
Yes, she's done a lot of shows and a lot of movies. Really, really awesome actress. And Ragnar, what are your thoughts on this episode?
Well, I gotta agree with Curtis there. That actress definitely stole like every scene that she was in. Overall, I thought it was an interesting episode. I liked the idea of exploring more about Curzon and, you know, how a symbiont could have events that affect them from past lives. So I thought that was interesting. Overall, though, it is a little bit slower episode for sure.
All right. Okay, so episode 9 is The Passenger. And the star date is 46570.8, directed by Paul Lynch. Story by Morgan Gendel. Teleplay by Morgan Gendel, Robert Hewitt Wolf, and Michael Piller. February 21st, 1993. Honestly, this is... Oh, sorry. A sinister criminal is hiding in the mind of someone on Deep Space Nine, but Bashir struggles to understand how it works. I like this episode. I don't know about you guys, but this is one of my favorites from season one. Especially the reveal towards the end of the episode when you find out that Bashir's the bad guy. Like, that was so cool. Like, I don't know, like when Quark, when he's got that team of mercenaries and they're, going to meet their employer in the runabout, and then Dr. Bashir's standing there, and then Quark, oh, I'm sorry. Doctor, we must have made a wrong turn somewhere. And he's like, nope, I've been waiting for you. And it was awesome. And, having Alexander Siddig, play off Avery Brooks, like when they have that exchange on the view screen, I thought was cool. And I just find it an interesting thing with Bashir is it happens in later seasons where Bashir, you just don't suspect him as being a bad guy, and he's not, but that they play on that, like it was in the season three finale when they're trying to find the shapeshifter and it turns out it's Bashir. That was cool, because you didn't see that one coming. And then in season five again, he's replaced by a shapeshifter because no one suspects Bashir. He's not the guy that's going to be sabotaging the wormhole or anything. But yeah, this is easily one of my favorite episodes of season one. Ragnar, what are your thoughts?
I thought it was a great episode. I always loved Bashir and Alexander Siddig, I believe it is, the actor.
Yep.
He's been in so many different fandoms, and I always think he's great. So I thought it was a really good episode. And you're right, later on it was particularly awesome when they had the founder of the Changeling as the Doctor, because you're right, nobody would ever suspect him.
Yep, fantastic. Curtis, what are your thoughts, sir?
Nothing that hasn't been said so far. Extremely entertaining episode. Heck of a twist at the end. Really liked that. Because, of course, we were all believing that it was the officer who was trying to bring him in. We were all sure that Vantica was inside her. That was the name, right? Vantica?
Yep.
Yeah, Rayo Vantica.
Right, perfect. I didn't see the twist coming. I'm not a huge fan of some of Sittig's acting skills. This was sort of one of them. Of course, it's Star Trek, so it wouldn't be Star Trek if it wasn't just a little bit cheesy in some of the acting. So I accept that as just part of the package, and it kind of adds to the charm.
Yeah, I really think he did that on purpose. Like, he really was playing the, you know, mustache-twirling bad guy, right? Yeah.
Absolutely.
I definitely appreciated that. And Richard, what are your thoughts, sir?
I can't say that it's one of my favorite episodes. Some of the acting was a little bit over, but I enjoy a little bit over in general. A little bit extra, as the kids say. But I don't think it was one of my favorites, and I wouldn't nap through it, personally. But, it was all right for me. I don't really have a whole lot to say about this episode.
Hey, not a problem, not a problem. And that's the way it goes. Sometimes, you know, there's an episode that'll be universally hated, there's some that'll be universally loved, and then there's some that are some like and some don't. That's just the way it goes. All right, so we'll... Episode 10, Move Along Home, Stardate 46612.4, directed by David Carson, story by Michael Piller, teleplay by Frederick Rappaport, Lisa Rich, and Jeannie Kerrigan-Fauci. Original air date, March 14th, 1993. Quark is forced to play a game by the Wadi, a newly encountered species, and lives. And the lives of the crew depend on the outcome. All right, so for me, the previous episode was one of my favorite of season one. This one is my least favorite of season one, and probably the entire series. I really thought this was a terrible episode. Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
Basically, completely the opposite. And again, this has to do with this was the first episode that I can remembering having watched it as a 9-year-old when it was first coming out. Sorry if I made anybody feel old just now. this is the first episode because we used to watch Star Trek every time it was on in my house, thanks to my stepmom.
Yep.
And this is the one that I remembered all the way through my life, having only seen it the one time until, must have been 2010 when I borrowed Richard's copies of Deep Space Nine on DVD. And I was like, man, I knew it. I totally remember this episode. So probably just for that reason, it's one of my favorites, just because it holds a place in my memory from back then, right? And side fact, we also got to hear Avery Brooks in Vegas sing the Alan Moraine song, which was kind of cool.
It would have been cool to hear him sing it.
Because it gives me warm, fuzzy feelings when I watch it. And through that lens, I can't really tell you if it's a good or bad episode. Because I am biased.
Well, and there's nothing wrong with that. Like I said, some of these episodes, you know, we might be on polar opposites. But I will say, according to Wikipedia, a 2015 binge-watching guide for Star Trek Deep Space Nine by Wired recommends skipping this episode. In 2016, fans at the 50th anniversary Star Trek convention voted Move Along Home as the worst episode of the series, and the 8th worst episode of the Star Trek franchise overall, being the only episode of Deep Space Nine to end up in the bottom 10. And then Digital Fox ranked this episode the 2nd worst episode of all Star Trek up to 2018.
Woof.
Yeah. But, I mean, a few years ago, we did season one of the original series. And there's the one episode, I can't remember what it's called, but it's the one where there's that guy what's that guy's name? Where he's Lazarus, where he's like fighting like an alternative version of himself. And everyone on the episode hated it. And I'm like, that's one of my favorite episodes. Like, Like it was funny how I always loved that episode ever since I was a kid, and to hear so many people like hate on it, I was like, wow, I didn't realize that. But Ragnar, what are your thoughts on this episode?
Oh, I would advise everyone to take Wired's advice and just not watch it. I never liked this episode. I mean, the new aliens are like the phoniest, cheapest looking costumes and makeup that DS9 ever did. I mean, even the original series never got that low. And yeah, there's just, for me, there's not a lot of good points in this episode.
Richard, what are your thoughts, sir?
You know, I'm of two minds on this one, agreeing with you and Ragnar, but also agreeing with Curtis. There's some points that I like about it, and the Alamo Rain song, I don't know, it's just catchy. You know, it's kind of like a throwback to when you were young, and there's those little catchy tunes, and then there's the sort of in my mind, kind of a analogous to the Freddy, you know, the Freddy kind of counting song, if I remember correctly, and just things like that. It wasn't the greatest episode. I don't think it was the worst, though, you know, as far as how cheesy it was, definitely one of the lesser good episodes. But overall, it was all right, and I don't skip it usually. This time around, I did, just because I didn't have a lot of time to go through the first season. But in general, yeah, that's pretty much all I have to say about that.
All right. There is one thing I wanted to add for the previous episode and this episode, is it featured a character that joined the crew, and that was Lieutenant George Primman. Basically, and he was played by an actor named James Lashley. And if you'll notice, in that episode and this episode, there's no O'Brien in those episodes, and Lieutenant George Primman basically was filling in for O'Brien, I guess, because apparently when they did this, like when they signed Cole Meany to play O'Brien for the season one, they had an agreement with him because he had to go film a movie, I think in Ireland at the time, so they let him go to Ireland to film this movie, so that's why they brought in this Lieutenant George Primman character, whom we never see after this episode. Like, he's just gone. I at the time, I assumed they were going to write him into the show, but then they just kind of dropped him when O'Brien came back. And I think they stayed in the previous episode that Chief O'Brien went and took his family home to Earth for a visit or something. So that's why the character's not there. But yeah, for this episode and the previous one, there's no O'Brien, there's Lieutenant George Primman. And this was his last episode, this one.
Definitely a forgettable character. I barely remember him, actually, to be honest.
Yeah, he was definitely forgettable. Definitely. Alright, so the next episode, episode 11, is The Negus. And it's stardate 46657.0, directed by David Livingston. Story by David Livingston, teleplay by Iris Stephen Bear. Quark is named as the head of the Ferengi Alliance by Grand Negus Zek, but he is now surrounded by his enemies. So this is our first Ferengi-centric episode, and I gotta tell you, you know, like, with TNG, you know, whenever, like, we were talking about John DeLancey, whenever a Q episode would happen, I always was giddy. Because I knew I was going to laugh, I knew it was going to be funny, you know, I knew I was going to like it, because John DeLancey's such a great actor, Q's such a great character. Now, on Deep Space Nine, we have the Ferengi episodes. Anytime we get a Ferengi episode, I'm giddy. And this was the first one, because I always get a good laugh. Even the worst Ferengi episodes always have something good about them. But this episode, you know, we got introduced to the Grand Negus, played by the great Wallace Shawn. Awesome actor. And it was funny. And it was funny to see, you know, Quark always kind of, you know, in this episode in particular, you see Quark kind of crapping on Rom quite a bit. and then Rom is about to jettison Quark out the airlock. Quite the turnaround for Rom. You know, I just, like I said, Wallace Shawn, I love that guy, great actor, and the Negus was a great first Ferengi-centric episode. Curtis, what are your thoughts on this episode?
Well, and Wallace Shawn, it couldn't have been anybody else. I love Grand Negus Zeki. Just anytime he's on the screen, mm-hmm. big smile on my face, can't help it. As far as the plot advancement of the episode, I could take it or leave it, but I do love the Ferengi-centric episodes just for what they are, for showing the race. You know, we get to see a little bit more, obviously a lot better than they were when we saw them in TNG,
yep.
where they were kind of lame. But no, it was really cool to start seeing their culture get fleshed out, and Zek being the head of that, obviously was cool to see him, see what they're all about.
Yep. Richard, what are your thoughts, sir?
Actually, I really enjoyed it. I'm a big fan of Mehar Du.
Yes.
And Mr. Hom, Loxana's butler. Those characters, they don't really say much. They do have one or two lines, I think, in the entirety of Star Trek. But I enjoyed those particular characters. They do a lot of acting kind of with their faces and just with what they do. And, of course, Wallace Shawn being absolutely epic. And it sort of showed some of the interplay and some of the complexities of Ferengi culture. And I thought that was really awesome as well. But overall, it was a really good episode. I enjoyed it.
Excellent. And Ragnar, your thoughts, sir?
Well, the only thing I like more than the Ferengi are the Klingons. I just love Ferengi culture. I think they're hilarious. I love how they always try to find a way to make them even more greedy and corrupt. And of course, you know, Wallace Shawn is a phenomenal actor, and like you, every time I would see, oh, this is a Ferengi episode, I was just giddy, totally into it. So yep. I think we're all kind of on the same page with this one.
Excellent. All right, so episode 12 is Vortex, and that is Stardate 46689.6, directed by Winrich Kolbe, written by Sam Rolfe, and in this episode, original air date, April 18th, 1993. Odo discovers he may not be the only one of his kind when a visitor from the Gamma Quadrant claims he can contact Odo's people. It was an alright episode. If I remember correctly, this is the one where the guy has the key, the necklace key, where it shapeshifts into a key, and then it unlocks his daughter's, I don't know, tomb or something?
Cryo chamber.
Yeah. I remember it being okay. I haven't watched it in years, but it was all right. Richard, what are your thoughts, sir?
I kind of enjoyed it. It did have a little bit more backstory on Odo, which kind of becomes important in the future. And it was a very Odo episode, I think. The sort of subplot with the Myrmidons I thought was really cool. I wish they would have done a lot more with that species as well. They're a twin species, and if, say, one dies, the other can't really survive without the other twin, and I like that. And all in all, I thought it was pretty good, and I enjoyed it.
Excellent. Ragnar, your thoughts?
Well, I remember being really excited at the start of the episode because I was so curious about Odo. You know, he's a shapeshifter. We've never, you know, as far as I knew at that, especially the first time watching the show, we'd never encountered a shapeshifter before. And I remember being very disappointed by the end of the episode that we still didn't really know a whole lot about Odo or where he came from or if there were more of them or not.
Yeah, I was happy that they kept that a mystery, at least for the first two seasons. And apparently, and I think he said this at the convention in Vulcan, but Rene Auberjonois, I guess, went on record saying that he never wants to find out where his people come from. He wants it to remain a mystery, and if they ever tried writing it in, he would leave the show. And then season three came along, and they're like, actually, we're gonna make them the big bad guys. You know, they're the head of the Dominion. Then he was okay with it. He's like, oh, okay. But yeah, like you, I was disappointed that we didn't get to see his people in this episode at the time. But the payoff was worth the wait, though. And Curtis, what are your thoughts, sir?
I'm on the same page as Ragnar. It's kind of like a Tootsie Pop that doesn't have any chocolate in the middle, just kind of disappointment. But obviously, there were some important things that had to happen, like the introduction to the fact that, hey, Odin does come from... Odo does come from a people. So that's interesting. We didn't know that before. Not really. But I find Croden to be tiresome.
Do you have a couple of quick... maybe trivia, maybe not, but Odo's line, he says, "I'm a security chief, not a combat pilot," was sort of a tribute to McCoy's running line of, like, "I'm not a doctor," or "I'm a doctor and not a so-and-so."
Yep.
And, fun fact, it was the first episode where Morn was identified by name, and his name is an anagram from a Cheers character, Norm. And I thought that was really cool.
Yep.
Huh. I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Love Morn. I've always loved Morn.
Me too. I just wish he actually said something.
They even give him a whole episode that's all based around Morn, and he still never gets a line.
Right? A couple things with Morn. Because, yeah, basically they switch the M and the N, right? Instead of Norm, it's Morn. Right. So they switch that around. Plus, in that episode, like, where it was... The Morn episode where he apparently dies, and like, this is season six, so, but when Quark is doing his eulogy or whatever, and he's like, someone has to sit in the chair, blah blah blah, and he just grabs a guy and makes him sit there, that human guy that he's making sit in Morn's chair is actually the actor who plays Morn, Mark Shepard, I believe his name is. Yeah, I thought that was kind of funny. Of course, I didn't know that at the time when I watched it. All right, well, let's move on to episode 13, and it is Battle Lines. And it is Stardate 46715.2, directed by Paul Lynch, story by Hilary J. Bader, teleplay by Richard Danis and even Carlos Summers. Original air date, April 25th, 1993. The spiritual leader of Bajor, Kyle Paca, travels with Sisko on a trip to the Gamma Quadrant, but is stranded with him on a world where the dead are resurrected. It was an okay episode. I like the actress that played Opaka. She did come back in that dream sequence in episode 4, but I kind of wish we could have seen her again. I mean, she did tell Sisko that their paths were going to cross again, and maybe that's what she meant by, you know, her coming to him in that vision in season 4. I didn't mind this episode. And, I don't know, fun fact is the character of Shelah, I believe that's his name, Shelah, is played by Jonathan Banks, who plays Mike Ehrmantraut on Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul. I love that.
Fantastic actor.
I love that actor. Jonathan Banks, fantastic. All right, so Richard, what are your thoughts on this episode?
I actually really enjoyed it. Personally, I think I just recently watched it as well. There's a lot of really cool techno babble with the artificial satellites.
Mm-hmm.
I guess most every satellite's artificial. Bringing down the runabout and just kind of how deep it is, where every single, you know, prisoner on the moon is brought back and it's continually just killing each other over and over again. I actually really, really like Kyle Paca. I wish they could have done more with her. I enjoyed her as the Kai. I think she could have done a lot of good for Bajor in general. And aside from that, I thought it was a good episode. You know, there was a lot of story there. you know, with the Noel Ennis and the Ennis. Chola, again, played very well.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, in general, I really liked the episode. It really showed sort of a deeper look into Kira's commitment to her faith. And she may not have known personally Kyle Pocket very well, but the death of the Kai is a huge, huge impact on someone with faith of that magnitude, and it kind of shows through here.
Oh, absolutely. Like, there's no doubt that the Kai and the Bajoran religion is basically based on Christianity, that the Kai is basically the Pope for the Bajoran people. And, they take their religion very seriously on Bajor. And, yeah, like, she, you know, very influential character. Curtis, what are your thoughts?
On more or less the same page, I do enjoy the episode. I think it gave us our first real look into just how deep that the Bajoran the faith aspect of Bajoran culture really runs. Yep. And it's not just Kira who showed some faith in this episode. Kyle Paka knew she wasn't coming back from this moon, and she went. Like, that's powerful, man. Like, just as a demonstration of the commitment that these people had to their system of faith. Like, holy smokes, man. I wouldn't do that. Would you do that? I don't believe you. fun piece of trivia. Spoiler warning. So if you don't want to hear what happens to this moon 50 years in the future, plug your ears. They do eventually find peace, and you, the player character in Star Trek Online, go and rescue them and Kyle Paka, and they're all well.
That's cool.
Very cool.
I actually really liked it.
And Ragnar, what are your thoughts, sir?
Well, I don't have a whole lot to say that hasn't already been said. I thought it was a great episode. I thought Kyle Paka was really cool. She made a huge impression on me. And, yeah, it did seem like kind of a shame that we really didn't get to see a whole lot more of her. Yeah.
Yep. All right. Episode 14 is The Storyteller, Stardate 46729.1, directed by David Livingston. Story by Kurt Michael Bensmiller. Teleplay by Kurt Michael Bensmiller and Ira Stephen Bear. May 2nd, 1993, the original air date. O'Brien is recruited to save a Bajoran village from destruction by a mysterious cloud creature. It was an alright episode. You know, like, this is, I think, one of the first episodes where O'Brien and Bashir teamed up together. And I gotta say, you know, I love their friendship. Like, I know it didn't start here, obviously, and it really didn't pick up until season four. Like, season three, they started hanging out a little bit more, but they were not really friends at that. Like, I guess they were friends, but not really close friends. It wasn't until, like, season four when they really became really good friends, and I love that progression. That they didn't just automatically were friends, that it took some time and it took some work. O'Brien actually used to get really annoyed with Bashir. But then, you know, a few years later, like, they're the best of friends. And I remember on this episode, it was also a Nog and Jake episode, where they're trying to help that leader of that one faction, who's a 15-year-old girl, on... I don't know how to negotiate, and they're trying to cheer her up and all that kind of stuff. Again, it was a great, great scene, Jake and Og playing off each other, and you know, it was an all right episode. I didn't mind it. Ragnar, what are your thoughts?
Well, when I first watched this episode as a kid, I really didn't like it because I thought it was too religious, and I found, as a kid, I found religion very, very boring. So I liked the subplot about, you know, them more than I liked the main plot, I guess.
All right. Curtis, what are your thoughts, sir?
More or less the same. I didn't care for the main plot. It seemed interesting at first, but then once it's revealed, like, oh, well, the Dalrock is really, this is what it is, and this is how we stop it. I have trouble buying into that premise, but I did enjoy the subplot happening on the station. Of course, anything with Nog and Jake is usually pretty entertaining.
Yep. And Richard, your thoughts?
Actually, I dig the episode. The Dalrock and the Sierra kind of main plot was a little bit hokey, but I kind of enjoyed it in this weird, like, guilty pleasure kind of way. But again, just like everybody else, the No J thing just kicks me off every time. Like, shows like that and characters like that with their best friends doing cool things, just kind of echoes like how I view oftentimes, like, my friendship. Like, Curtis is my best friend, and we've gone and done some really cool things together, and we've traveled a lot together, and, you know, just kind of like makes me sort of like appreciate that more in general, and I like that kind of thing a lot.
Excellent.
Do you want to make out?
Maybe later. After the quarantine.
All right. Moving on. Episode 15 is Progress, and it is Stardate 46844.3, directed by Les Landau, written by Peter Allen Fields, May 9th, 1993. Kira has to deal with a stubborn farmer who refuses to leave his home, even though it's slated for demolition. And again, this is also another Jake and Nog episode, as they're trying to make some trades. Is this the one with the self-stealing stem bolts? Is that where this come? Was this another one of those?
I believe so. I think this is the where they actually create the No J Consortium. It is. It's the one.
Oh, yeah.
Where they eventually get the land, which is really important, the Tessipates of land, and then the self-sealing stem bolts just happen to show up. And you know what? I was thinking about this just as like a sidebar, but self-sealing stem bolts would actually be really cool in like IRL. It would be awesome to actually build with it. Just a random thought I had one day.
I'm not sure how you figure, because we asked Ira Steven Bear in person, and he had no idea what they did either.
You know what? I know that he doesn't know, but I was just thinking of some of the functions it could have, and, you know, it could be pretty cool.
Yeah. All right. Curtis, Ragnar, any other thoughts on this episode?
Oh, this is one of my favorite episodes from season one.
Oh.
I just love the stubborn, grumpy old man who just refuses to listen to reason unless it's, you know, his reason. Mm-hmm. I always identify with characters like that, so I love this episode.
I can get behind that. I'm a little stubborn myself from time to time. But just the way that his particular brand of stubbornness gets so under Kira's skin so perfectly. My God, what an entertaining dynamic.
I agree with that, yep. All right. Episode 16, If Wishes Were Horses. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Richard.
Just a couple more points on that last episode there.
Sure.
I'm really curious what Yamek sauce is, because I like sauces, honestly. and I really want to know what that's all about, but it's probably something to do with fish. Like, canard is, you know, fish juice or whatever. But I think that'd be really cool. And again, the character of the old stubborn man just, it reminds me of like what my Opa would have been like if he wasn't, you know, married and all that. It seems like something he would do in that situation, and I always kind of like relate to that. Mollebach is his name. And I'm also rather stubborn and would probably end up like that if that was me. And another, you know, Jake Nog episode, which is, again, always fantastic. But, again, one of my favorite episodes, and I really enjoyed it as well.
Excellent. Episode 16, If Wishes Were Horses, Stardate 46853.2, directed by Robert Legato, story by Nell McHugh Crawford and William L. Crawford. Teleplay by Nell McHugh Crawford, William L. Crawford, and Michael Piller. Original air date, May 16th, 1993. Deep Space Nine is put in jeopardy when the crew's thoughts manifest themselves, and such figures as Rumpelstiltskin appear. I always kind of liked this episode. I thought it was funny that, you know, Bashir's fantasy would be to have Dax, and that, you know, she actually comes true, and there's a version of Dax that is in love with Bashir. The Rumpelstiltskin thing, you know, okay. Bok Bokai, the
baseball player.
The baseball player. I really liked that they brought baseball into Star Trek, and I love that Sisko is such a baseball fan. It was an all right episode for me. Curtis, what are your thoughts?
Well, I'm not really enjoying this episode so much as a kid, but once I was a grown-up, and then you get to the end of the episode where Sisko is talking to the alien who looked like Bok Bokai and realized, you know, this is what's going on and the conclusion has happened. The alien mentions, like, you should value your imagination because you don't know how rare a gift it is. And it's a good episode that just reminds me to, like, maybe I need to just stop and think some more in life than I do currently. You know, maybe just let myself wander mentally, as mm-hmm. it were. Because maybe we are the only species that has that. Like, I don't know. So, I don't know. It's, I enjoyed it a lot more as a grown-up than I did as a kid. I know that much.
All right. Ragnar, what are your thoughts?
Well, I've always thought this was a very silly episode, but I like that, and I like that dynamic in Star Trek, that there are some episodes that are, well, they're just silly, but mm-hmm. it's okay. It doesn't always have to be scientific. It doesn't always have to be serious. It doesn't always have to be, you know, deep or heavy. It can sometimes just be entertainment, and so I think it's a fun episode.
And Richard, your thoughts, sir?
Honestly, I would have to put this as one of my favorite episodes for the season. I really enjoyed the character of Rumpelstiltskin, but Bok Bokai just really kicked it off for me, just because Jake and Sisko are such huge baseball fans, and they kind of like keep it alive in the 24th century. And I went to a baseball game for the first time in my life in summer of 2019, and I enjoyed it. I could see where the enjoyment of baseball comes from, and you know, the different fantasies and the Gungi Jackdaw on the promenade and things like that. It was very silly, but there was a little bit of technical and techno babble things throughout the episode, which I also really appreciate. I love Star Trek techno babble, always have, and this episode had some techno babble in it, which I appreciated. But yeah, definitely one of my overall favorite episodes of season one.
Excellent.
Can I just add something there?
Yep, by all means.
I wanted to say I do really like how they made a historical character from what would still be our future. And I think that was really cool that it didn't have to be somebody from the modern day or somebody that we would all know who it was. It was somebody that, you know, they made up just for the show. And I always thought that was really cool.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. All right. Well, episode 17 is The Forsaken. Stardate 46925.1. Huh, I'm just looking at these star dates. The next star date is actually 46922.3 on the next episode, so it actually should technically take place before this one, but I don't know. I guess they got their star dates mixed up. Directed by Les Landau, story by Jim Trombetta, teleplay by Don Carlos Dunaway and Michael Piller. The Federation ambassador from Beta Zed, Luoxana Troi, visits the station and develops an affection for Odo. I'm going to be honest with you guys. not one of my favorite episodes of the season. It's definitely down there. And I just kind of realized, like, when I, because I've been rewatching a lot of TNG lately, and I did a rewatch of Deep Space Nine, I want to say 2 years ago, and I've kind of come to the conclusion that when I was younger, I used to like the Loaxana episodes, but now as I'm getting older, I'm really not liking them. Like, I and I know this is blasphemous for me to say this, but I really don't think Majel Barrett was that good of an actress. Like,
she was terrible.
There was, she's the wife of Gene Roddenberry, so I know it's blasphemous to even say that out loud. But but there's an episode of TNG. I just watched it the other day. I think it's called Half Life or Half a Life or something. It's the one where season 4 of TNG where there's that scientist played by David Ogden.
Timison,
yes, played by David Ogden Stiers from MASH, and he has to basically go home and commit suicide because he's turning 60, and that's what they do on this planet, and then Loaxana is convincing him otherwise and stuff. And the scenes when she's just by herself are so bad. Like, like her acting is so bad. Like, what really redeemed that episode was Timison, David Ogden Stiers. He is a great actor, that guy. Or unfortunately was a great actor. He has since passed. And so has Majel Barrett, of course. But yeah, like, as I'm getting older, it's like, when I was younger, I used to laugh at the Loaxana episodes, but now I have a hard time even getting through them. Like, they're like, the acting's so bad. But anyway, that's just my personal opinion, but kind of sounds like someone else agreed with me. Ragnar, what are your thoughts?
Oh, I love Majel Barrett, and the reason I love her is because she's the voice of the computer.
Yep.
Not because she's Loaxana. Loaxana is not a great character, and no offense to Majel, she wasn't never really a great actress, but as the voice of the computer, I have just an immense love for her. And I remember watching this particular episode as a kid and looking at my mom and saying, I don't understand, is she the computer? Because I recognize the voice so much.
Yep. And I always liked that. Like, there was a few times in TNG where she would actually talk to the computer, and then it's her voice talking back. I always kind of liked that little nod. She definitely, the role was definitely created for her because of who she was, right? Curtis, yeah. What are your thoughts?
Oh boy, I'm going to be the unpopular man in the room. I get such a kick out of Loaxana. I honestly never noticed the bad acting. I don't pay the most attention, though. But no, I really get a kick out of her, especially on Deep Space Nine episodes, because it's always something, you know, something's going wrong. And I just got a kick out of that. And she's sort of like an overgrown child, you know, in her free-spiritedness. And that really appeals to me because I feel like I've sort of lost some of that myself. So I kind of like to live vicariously through Loaxana sometimes, I guess.
And I should point out, like, she does play well. Like, if the episode's kind of like hammy, you know, like when everyone's kind of hamming it up, you know, like, you know, the third season episode of TNG where she was on Menage a Troy, you know, like that was where the episode ends with Picard doing Shakespeare. Like, it was so awesome. Like, like they hammed it up so well. It's when she has to be dramatic. Like I said, that episode with Timison, and he played it so well, you know, as this guy that's, you know, he doesn't want to actually commit suicide. Like, he wants to live. But, you know, it's the custom of his people, and you could see, like, the dilemma and how he's struggling with it. And he acts it so well. But then when she's trying to be dramatic, it's to me anyway, it comes across as very
I feel you.
But I mean, on the episode, like for this episode, it's kind of like a hammy episode, but in particular, like the third season episode where everyone's falling in love with each other, and because she's
Joy, buddy.
Yeah, like that was definitely a hammy episode.
Joy,
and she definitely fit it perfect. But yeah, Richard, what are your thoughts, sir?
Honestly, growing up, I don't know if I really enjoyed Lock Swan episodes all that much. They were pretty fun and kind of campy. But in Deep Space Nine, I actually started to really like Majel Barrett. And the scenes that she has with Odo in the turbo lift, and he basically, you know, opens himself up and becomes vulnerable and, you know, goes into her lap in his gelatinous form. And I thought that was some pretty powerful stuff. And it showed that she had, like, real heart. And I thought she did the acting really well in that sort of, like, dramatic portion. And I really enjoyed it. Not my most favorite, but they're mostly fun episodes. And this one wasn't as fun, but I like her and I enjoy her acting. And that's pretty much all I've got to say about that.
Well, for this episode, maybe this is one I have to revisit, because it's been a long time since I've watched this one. And maybe, you know, for the episode of TNG that I referenced with Timison. Maybe she just was off during that time. Like, who knows? Like, anything could have been happening, right? All right, so episode 18, Dramatis Persona. Stardate 46922.3, directed by Cliff Boyle, written by Joe Manosky. May 30th, 1993 was the original air date. A Klingon ship comes through the wormhole and explodes. The crew of Deep Space Nine consider a mutiny. I thought this was a fun episode. You know, this is where they're all under the influence of something, I believe. And Kira basically is like plotting against, Sisko, but Sisko's kind of like busy making a clock or something, if I remember correctly. And it's O'Brien that kind of leading the charge against Kira on Sisko's behalf. I remember kind of finding this episode fun, and I think that clock, if I'm remembering correctly, that clock that he builds in this episode, you see it in his office for the rest of the series.
You definitely do.
All right, well, I'll throw it to you, Richard, because you probably remember this a little bit better than I do. What are your thoughts on this episode?
Actually, I really enjoyed it. I think I just watched it today, to be honest, and it was a little bit sad in the beginning because the Vorcha class Klingon ship is my favorite Klingon battleship, and it comes out of the wormhole and it blows up, and I remember just feeling like a little like pang of like, oh, my heart, because I mean, of that ship, and of course, like, a ship full of Klingon warriors dying in battle, that makes me happy, because I know that would make them happy as well. And then they were exploring some planet, and there was some electrical spheres that basically took over their brains, and that's what happened to the command crew, all except Odo, because Odo doesn't have an organic brain as such, so he was able to excise the demon, and they come up with this really cool plan, and Julian Bashir thinks that he's also immune because he's special in some sort, and then they get this really cool plan, get everyone together. Boom, flush them into space. And yeah, I thought it was really good because it gave the actor sort of like a fun acting. It's kind of like with the Mirror episodes. Mm-hmm. They kind of got to play, you know, bad versions of themselves. And I thought it was really great. And how Jadzia was on Kira's side. And then O'Brien was basically, you know, doing all the planning with Odo and stuff. And Sisko, again, he was just hiding away in his quarters and building that clock, which is actually a really badass looking clock, and mm-hmm. and that show up throughout the series. But all in all, it was a really good episode, probably a lot of fun for them to play something different, like a whole new personality, basically, and I really enjoyed it.
Excellent. Curtis, your thoughts, sir?
You know, this is probably my favorite episode of season one. Nice. I don't even know where to begin. Just I find that the whole premise of the main plot line was just fascinating. And Of course, I didn't really notice till later in life, and I usually, when I do watch Star Trek, I have to start with TNG and then watch Deep Space Nine. So for me, this episode always occurs not long after I've watched the terrible, terrible Season 7 episode in TNG with Masaka. And, oh man, what a terrible piece. But this episode, Dramatis Persona, is sort of like, you take that concept, except you do it right. Where you have like this alien culture, or alien influence rather, sort of creeping its way in and taking over. But instead of physically altering the environment, it gets into people's heads, which mm-hmm. it just works out way, way better than the TNG version. Jesus, I could go on for hours. But yeah, this is one of my favorite episodes of the season. Just extraordinarily interesting. And again, it's nice to see actors step slightly outside of their character's usual personality and see what they can do with it.
Excellent. And Ragnar, your thoughts, sir?
Well, I was laughing there when Richard was talking, because I definitely felt something similar when the Klingon ship showed up. Oh, sweet, Klingons! And then, oh, no Klingons. I thought it was a great episode. I like how it showcased Odo, because he's a great character, and I felt like at this point in the show he hadn't quite gotten enough of the spotlight that he deserved. And, yeah, I think this was a great Odo episode.
Excellent. All right, so episode 19, Duet. Stardate 46933.4, directed by James L. Conway. Written by, or story by, Lisa Rich and Janine Kerrigan Fucci, teleplay by Peter Allen Fields. Original air date, June 13th, 1993. Curtis said the last episode was his favorite. This would be my favorite for season one. A visiting Cardassian, Maritza, may in fact be the notorious war criminal Guldar Heel, butcher of the Galatep labor camp, and Kira is determined to bring him down. Such great acting by Nana Visitor and by the guest star of this episode, who plays Maritza. I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that right.
Eamon Maritza, that's right.
Yeah, okay, perfect. Such a great exchange, you know, back and forth. Like, he does such a good job conveying, you know, true evil. Even though the character, spoilers, the character is faking it, like, he's, you know, basically taken over the persona of Guldar Heel, and he wants to be put on trial. He wants for Guldar Heel to answer for his crimes, but he can't, because he's not really Guldar Heel. To me, like, yeah, this was such a great back and forth between Kira and Maritza. Very powerful. I just remember thinking, like, this is such a powerful episode. Even, you know, like, back in 93, I was 13 years old. And I just remember thinking, wow, like, this is really good acting. Like, this is very good. Curtis, what are your thoughts, sir?
Definitely a very enjoyable episode. The second episode of season one, we got introduced to Garak, and of course I made comments about how you got to get a glimpse into the Cardassian mind and sort of how their culture works. Now here we are at the end, the second last episode of the season, mm-hmm. and we get to see even more of that. And if we thought Garak was full of shit, oh man, we didn't even know about this guy.
Yep.
Just had Kira twisted right up, running in circles. Very entertaining episode, and super cool to see more of the Cardassians.
Agreed, absolutely. Ragnar, what are your thoughts?
Well, something I particularly loved about DS9 over some of the other Star Treks was how dark it could get, and how they didn't shy away from exploring darker topics. And I think this is a perfect example of that. It's got some very heavy themes, and it was very well written and very well acted. and it wasn't even remotely silly like some of the previous episodes.
Well, and one thing I want to just add in there before I throw it over to Richard, and Richard and I talked about this when we did like we did an episode where we talked about Star Trek Picard. One of the things that drives me nuts about new Star Trek is, like, in a particular Picard, is they got to show flashbacks. Like, they got to show you these terrible things that are done, and because they have to show it, right? And that's how the story relies on. They have to show you. They have to shock you. In this episode, it's a prime example of Star Trek where they talk about terrible things that happened, and you really feel, you know, through Kira and through Maritza pretending to be Darheel, you know, how evil and how terrible things were, right? They didn't need to do a flashback. You got all the information you needed from the exchange of words between the two actors and how they played off each other, how they got worked up and upset, and I really think that that's something that they're missing in new Star Trek is, you can put across a point, you know, where there's violence and there's terrible things, but you don't always have to show it. You know, if you got good actors that explain what happened and they play off each other well, that, you know, that's all you need. You don't need to show a guy getting his eye ripped out of his head. Like, you don't need to see that in Star Trek.
I agree with you on that.
But, Richard, what are your thoughts, sir?
You know, honestly, on further analysis of the episode, I'd have to say it ranks right up there for me in a different way, If Wishes Were Horses, as my favorite episode, because it was entirely character-based and acting-based. Mm-hmm. The character of Haman Maritza and his sort of persona that he took on of Galdar Heel was absolutely phenomenal. And, you know, he was a man who felt the guilt of what his race had done over the years on Bajor. And he felt that, you know, something he could do to alleviate some of that guilt was to become Galdar Heel. And he does it so convincingly well. And honestly, I think that his death in the end just didn't have as much impact as it should have in what he was trying to do.
Yeah,
he was basically just, you know, mugged and stabbed out in the promenade, and you know, his death could have really meant something as far as the relations between the two species. And I mean, I get for the episode, and Ragnar's right. Deep Space Nine really pressed upon some of the darker aspects of human nature, mm-hmm. and some of the dark aspects of, you know, who we are as a people and some of our history and things like that. And yeah, this is definitely probably in the top five episodes of Star Trek in general, as far as like fantastic acting in general.
Excellent. I also wanted to throw this out there. I think this was like one of the first convention. No, let me think here. This would have been the second convention I went to way back in the 90s. Like, this was when Deep Space Nine was still on the air. I don't even think this episode had come out yet. And Nana Visitor came to Edmonton to a Star Trek convention. And she was talking, I'm sure she was talking about this episode, where it was very, very, she had to really put a lot of acting chops into this. Like, it was a very hard thing for her to get through. And she actually, if this is the episode she was referring to, and I think it is, she actually, like, Avery Brooks actually helped her through this episode quite a bit. And he was actually, in a lot of those scenes, in one scene in particular, I'm not sure where, it was one of the ones with her and Darheel where they're going back and forth. He's off camera. Avery Brooks is actually there while she's doing her scene, even though he didn't need to be there because he was helping her, the non-visitor. He was coaching her because he teaches acting, Avery Brooks. So he was helping her out helping her get through this episode, this scene. And even though he didn't need to be there, Sisko wasn't in the scene at all. The actor was there for his coworker. And I remember her talking about him and just basically praising him, like he's such an awesome guy. And I'm pretty sure this is the episode that she was referring to. But anyway.
That's very...
Yeah, very, very awesome guy. All right, so now we're at the season finale. This is episode 20. In the Hands of the Prophets. Stardate 46951.7, directed by David Livingston, written by Robert Hewitt Wolfe. Original air date, June 20th, 1993. Frictions escalate when Vedic Wynn arrives on Deep Space Nine and discovers schoolteacher Keiko O'Brien is teaching about the aliens in the Bajoran wormhole. And that's also the episode where we are introduced to Vedic Barile. All right. As far as a season finale, I thought this was perfectly fine. I really liked Barile. I thought he was a good character, good actor. But I absolutely love Louise Fletcher as Vedic Wynn. She is one of the great, in my opinion, one of the greatest villains in Star Trek. Villainesses. She was excellent. This was also the episode where it was Chief O'Brien's assistant that was going to be the murderer. I think she was introduced in the previous episode, or maybe it was a couple episodes before. She was going to be the assassin that gets thwarted. I like this episode. I love the introduction of Vedic Wynn. That character will have serious ramifications in Deep Space Nine to come. Great actress. Richard, what are your thoughts on this episode?
I actually thought it was really well done. And just as a props to Louise Fletcher, who plays in this episode Vedic Wynn, such a fantastic actress. She mm-hmm. basically embodies and just goes with everything that she's written for, and becomes one of the most major characters in the whole show, and plays it so well. And I hate her so much that it just goes to show like how good of an actress she is. But as a side note, I really want to know what a Jun'ja stick tastes like. I've always been fascinated by Jun'ja sticks. And in the previous episode, they talk about Yamek sauce again. And I'm like, you know, it'd be really cool to try these things. But I also like part of the plot about the school that Keiko runs and how she isn't teaching the things that, Vedic Wynn thinks she should be teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And all in all, it's a good episode, and they introduce Vedic Wynn. I believe this was her first episode.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's done really well. I've always liked Vedic Barile. Personally, I thought he was pretty great. And aside from that, I think it was a great, great episode. I enjoyed it.
Excellent. Ragnar, what are your thoughts, sir?
Well, Richard summed it up pretty good there. It's a great episode, and it introduces one of the most hated characters in probably the Star Trek universe, which was Vedic Wynn, who later becomes Kai Wynn. And she is just so phenomenal. You just absolutely can't stand her. She just makes your skin crawl. She's just mm-hmm. perfect. And I think, for me, every time she's on the screen, she just steals the whole screen. I forget that there's other people even in the scenes with her.
Yep, absolutely. Curtis, what are your thoughts, sir?
Well, what can you really do besides heap more praise upon Louise Fletcher? I mean, Richard said it, Ragnar said it, you said it. You end up just hating her. Mm-hmm. With such like a real visceral hatred that you can taste in the back of your throat. And that only happens when you have an amazing actor put in exactly the right role to just use everything that they have. And of course, Star Trek Deep Space Nine, part of the reason it's one of my favorites is it has the best villains. You've got Dukat and Wynn, and Dukat is just so insidious, and Wynn is like straight up malevolent, and it's such a good combination. And of course, their actors together are just both really good at being those characters. Anyway, getting off topic here. I can't say enough about Medic Wynn. My God, my skin's crawling right now just talking about her. No, definitely a great way to end a season, because now, you know, you've got some new ideas going on. You've got this person who, like, is obviously very antagonistic, and you need to give people something to look forward to in the next season, and I think this episode does a really good job of that.
Yep, absolutely. All right, and yeah, like, yeah, when spoilers, season 7, when Dukat and Wynn team up, it's like, oh my God, what is going to happen now? Can't wait till we get to season 7. We got a few episodes yet between then and there. All right. Well, first of all, I want to thank everyone for coming on tonight. Ragnar, Curtis, and Richard, I appreciate you guys coming on, and I'm hoping you guys will all come on again as we continue with each season of Deep Space Nine, because there's a lot of great episodes. There's a lot of good conversation to be had, for sure.
Oh, I would love to. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem.
Absolutely.
But before we go, we do this thing on the podcast where it's called Where Can We Find You on the Internet? So if you guys have any blogs or businesses or anything you guys want to promote that people can find online, by all means, we'll go around the table. And Richard, where can we find you on the Internet, sir?
My Instagram and YouTube are Monk Lifts, but they're nothing great. I would like to personally promote Ragnar. He is the Trading Viking. Curtis and I have both purchased many items, as many as we could probably afford, of his wares. He's a traveling salesman, and he is awesome, and his items are something to behold. And I'm gonna promote Ragnar right now. So Ragnar, what's your info, my friend?
Well, thanks very much, man. I definitely remember being at Vulcan and just taking so much money off the two of you.
you definitely did, but I tell you, there's still more things that
you didn't even have to squeeze that hard.
No, not at all. I could pretty much just walk away and leave a jar that you'd put money in.
Note before I forget, did you end up figuring out how to make a sippy cup with like a horn sippy cup thing?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I got an idea for that now.
Oh man, I'm so glad, because there's still a couple things we'll talk later, but yeah, I'm glad.
But yeah, as Richard so graciously said, I am Ragnar the Trader. I make and sell mostly Viking themed stuff. I do a little bit of sci-fi, a little bit of fantasy too. And you can find me online at ragnarthetrader.com.
Excellent. Curtis, where can we find you, sir?
Well, if I've done everything correctly, you can't. I got rid of all my social media a while back, but I've been thinking about making a little comeback. But I will just give an additional shout-out to Ragnar. I still have my drinking horn that I purchased from him in 2014, and I just don't know how to wash it, but it's still holding up.
Oh. Hot water.
Hot water, yeah. And soap, man.
Perfect.
Actually, Curtis, I think that you should start a blog. I think that'd be really cool.
I've been really thinking about it. I mean, I have all this free time on my hands, so.
Yeah, excellent. We all got a lot of that free time going on right now.
Yep. Except for me. I still work two full-time jobs because they're quote-unquote essential.
Well, the rest of us can watch Star Trek Deep Space Nine all day then.
Hell yes.
All right. Well, on behalf of myself and Richard and Curtis and Ragnar, I want to thank you, dear listener, for taking the time to listen to the Pop Culture, or I'm sorry, the Pop Culture Pub podcast. Sorry, I stuttered there. This was our Deep Space Nine season one episode, and we are planning on going through the entire 7 seasons of Deep Space Nine. And our next episodes will probably run a little bit longer because season one was actually the shortest season. So from here on out, it's going to be, I think, 25 episodes per season. But it'll be good. But thank you for taking the time to listen to us. We really appreciate it. And we will see you again in the not-too-distant future.